future. There are no people. There are no people in the future.
No people at all.
There are no people in the future.
Where did all my people go?
There are no people in the future.
Let me try my people call.
It is Friday, July 2nd, 2021. Welcome to Raging Chicken's Out to Coop podcast. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken. Now, if you've been listening to the show, you know that I am away this week, so we will not be having our normal weekly show, which I normally talk to that guy who's filled with so much middle-aged millennial angst that he had to take that three-week hiatus to Utah. You know him. You love him. Sean Kitchen. But now this week I am away, and I didn't want to leave you without any content. So what I thought I would do is, bring back some, you know, some shows that, that we had done before that we produced in different ways. And I was going through some of the archives and some of the things that we've done at Raging Chicken over the past year. And I was thinking that the Pashi vote is going to be coming up about the consolidation of the universities. We've seen an uptick in resistance. There's, I know at Lock Haven, this past week, they've had all sorts of protests, and they're trying to build a movement to stop the consolidation. I know that other efforts have been ramping up. For example, Pashi Defenders have been doing a ton of work. And frankly, we might have different kinds of news or updates in this story before you actually hear the show, which I'm not accounting for, because I'm recording this on before our show on June 25th. So anyways, so today's show, what I'm going to bring you, it seemed fitting, given what's going to be happening with Pashi, what continues to happen to Pashi, to return to some of my major issues with what has not been discussed, and what lawmakers, state system of higher education administrators, university presidents just refuse to deal with. And that is the fraud, really, or at least fraudulent appearing financial practices that help put this university system in such debt and trouble. Now, this past Monday, you heard from Dana Morrison and Eleni Shermer about university debt, and this is kind of one of the things that has happened to Pashi. And for those people who've listened to the show for a long time, you know that I have been investigating for years what was happening in the budget practices of Kutztown University and the state system, university as, system as a whole. Back in 2018, there was a whistleblower from Westchester University, Colleen Bradley. And Colleen Bradley was the former vice president of administration and finance at Westchester University. And in her short time there, before she was fired for blowing the whistle on the university's practices and Pashi's practices, she got in touch with me. She had been following some of my reporting, and she said, you know, I know you've reported on my story, and I wanted to see if you can help. So we got together and found out that they were having a court case that was going through that was suing her firing, looking for whistleblower protections. And in that process, she was exposing the specific ways in which university administrators have been hiding their surpluses, right, as a way to both use as a bludgeon against faculty, as a way of justifying the increases of tuition, and a way of making sure that legislators would continue the flow of funds without knowing what exactly they were doing with them, right? So there was multiple levels of lying. And the tragedy of Colleen Bradley's story is that because of a technicality in the law, her case has never gone before a court and a jury. So it's astonishing, right? So basically what the argument is, and you'll hear a little bit about this in some of the shows coming up, is that because she is a state worker and because she started to expose this problem by speaking about it to, you know, other administrators on campus, right? Even though she was told not to, that that was not her job, she blew the whistle on it to people who are responsible, to boards of council trustees there and things like this. The arguments that courts had determined, this is a district court, federal district court, was that because she had done it as part of her job, that she was not entitled to whistleblower protections, and so the case wasn't heard. So they've never, nobody has ever made a determination on the facts, which is in my mind is disgusting. So anyways, which is what is allowed in many ways. This case, the keeping of two sets of books, the lying to faculty and staff and students about the state of budgets. Universities like Kutztown University claiming that, you know, the sky is falling, we're in crisis, when finding out really they're like so much, they're sitting on, you know, piles of surpluses that they're just hiding from everybody. Stuff like that. That's never gone to court, right, as to make a determination about whether that is fraudulent and whether that is criminal, right? So we don't have a determination on that. So back in 2018, after Colleen had gotten in touch with me, Colleen Bradley, we decided to sit down and we do kind of a mini documentary. And the documentary is in two parts. The first part is my interview with Colleen. And the second part is an interview with her lawyers, Daniel Kearney and Ed, I forget his name. So the second one is an interview. Yes, the second, Ed Mazurek. Sorry, I just want to look for his name. So Dan Kearney and Ed Mazurek are her lawyers. but the first part of this documentary is just Colleen, and given the really specific legal natures of the second part of the interview, which of the documentary, which was really specific to the cases going arguing before the Supreme Court. I'm not going to replay that one. I'll have a link to it in this in the show notes. I also have a link to the original video. Then next week, which will be July 9th, I will replay the podcast interview that I did with Colleen and her lawyer, Dan Kearney. So you'll get to hear a little bit about the case there too as well. I'll also, in the show notes, I will put links to the original, like I said, the original documentary, to the original podcast, and so on. I was really surprised when you started looking at it, is that that little mini documentary that we did in Raging Chicken had over, had 1,448 views, right? So it got some serious traction. But because of, like I said, because of the legal case and the way that went, the public as a whole didn't get to hear Colleen's story in full. So I thought, as you know, Chancellor Dan Greenstein is set to carry out a plan that is going to, you know, wreak havoc on the state system of higher education, fundamentally limit access to higher education for a large number of working class students in the state, I thought it would be useful to go back and remember and not forget this history of what happened with Colleen Bradley, what happened with the deceptive budgeting practices both at Westchester, at Kutztown, and the state system of higher education as a whole. And I encourage you to check it out and listen to the show. I want to remind you to make sure that you tune in to Rick Smith Show at Free Speech TV every Saturday at 7 p.m. Eastern and check out his daily podcast. Just go to the ricksmithshow.com and you get all the information about his latest podcast and so on. You also have to check out the newly launched, well, not so new anymore, I guess, newly launched, because they're at like episode 9 or something, I think, Sisters of the Night Caucus podcast. You can find that on Anchor, Spotify, wherever you get your podcast. The first episode dropped last week, and the amazing PA women stirring the cauldron behind that podcast really do rock the house. Make sure you follow them on Twitter, too, at the Night Caucus. And you got to check out The Game Inn. Yes, Game Inn, for all you gamers out there. It is a Quakertown-based black family-owned gaming store. They're friends of the show. They got everything that you could be looking for with games, new and old consoles. So check them out. Look them up at their Facebook page, The Game Inn with two N's. follow them on Twitter at The Game Inn with two N's. Or looking for something in particular, just check. Send them an email at thegameinpa@gmail.com. And a special shout out once again goes to Jonathan Mann, who wrote our intro song, There Are No People in the Future. Check out all his great stuff on his YouTube page and follow him on Twitter at SongOfDayMan. And I want to remind you that, look, if we want a progressive future, if we want to be able to have the fight back, we need progressive media. Support Pull No Punches homegrown progressive media today by becoming a patron of Raging Chicken for as little as $5 a month. So we go to patreon.com/rcpress. Look, we're in for this fight, but we need you, right? And like for the price of a good beer once a month, you can help keep the media in the movement and the movement in the media. Become a patron for as little as $5 a month. Go to patreon.com/rcpress today. Okay, so I'm going to turn you over now to our interview from April 4th, 2018. Well, that's when it was published. April 4th, 2018. This is with Colleen Bradley. This is from a little documentary we did here at Raging Chicken. It's hard watching it again, I have to say, because she is just an amazing woman, and what they did to her was horrible. And remember, if you want to see the whole video, see Colleen's video, see her on air, her tell her story, check out the links in the show notes for today, and we appreciate it. So this is Colleen Bradley. She is the former vice president of administration and finance at Westchester University. And administrators at Westchester University, the state system of higher education, were lying to the public about their budget. They were lying to faculty, lying to students. And Colleen Bradley just refused to lie, and she exposed the deception. And for her honesty and integrity, she was fired. So her case and the way that this was not decided may affect future whistleblowers going forward in this case. So do check it out. Anyways, I hope you enjoy this as a week off, and I'll be gone again next week. But until then, thank you all for tuning in and enjoy this interview with Colleen Bradley from April 2018.
Good morning, Kevin.
Good morning.
I'm glad to be here and tell my story about Westchester University. Prior to Westchester, I had started working at a bank and had worked up through the channels and had risen to senior vice president, chief financial officer, where I was basically managing a $160 million investment portfolio, as well as the financial modeling, where basically you would predict how your assets and liabilities would function in different interest rate environments. So I actually fell in love with financial modeling and thoroughly enjoyed my job. However, it became many hours, and I was having a family, and I had just finished my master's in finance and had decided how much I loved education and thought that I would want to pursue a career in education. And I started to look as I was pregnant with my second son and moved and had an opportunity at a school. It's called Westtown School. It's in Chester County. Mm-hmm. And it's a pre-K through 12th grade school that has boarding from 9th to 12th grade. And when I started there, basically I was doing special projects for the chief financial officer, and for the most part was doing all the projection models as well as the budgeting. And the school was issuing a state municipal bond, so I had to work with bankers, which was ideal coming from my background, to prepare various models that they needed as well as any information. And basically worked at Westtown and worked up through the ranks of chief financial officer, which was also a great opportunity. And there became a position at Westchester University that someone had reached out and let me know about. And knowing at that point I had four sons that could definitely benefit from attending Westchester University, where you would get remission. So I looked at the position and initially wasn't interested because the compensation was very low. But the more I thought about it, I thought, you know what, it's something that would put something different on my resume at a higher level and allow me to have my kids attend Westchester.
So when was this at this point?
That was in August of 2011.
And you had been at that other school for how many years at that point?
10 to 11 years.
10 to 11 years.
Yes. Okay. And I applied for the job, and I got called, I believe, by Dr. Ferentino, Chris Ferentino, who was leading the search committee, and was happy to hear and went in and interviewed, and I believe it was 2 days of meeting various committees and exploring the overall opportunity. And long story short, I ended up being offered the position of Director of Budget and Financial Planning, which was very exciting because basically it was the potential that the Mark Mixner, who was the Vice President of Administration and Finance at that time, discussed that within a 3 to 5 year framework that he would be retiring. So this position would be a nice opportunity for the person to step up into that role, which was extremely exciting.
So you're looking at this job and you're looking at your kind of, you know, your career ahead of you. You're looking at kind of a moving here, establishing yourself, and potentially even moving up through the organization, right?
Yes, right? Absolutely. So they made their offer, and it was a huge pay cut, and had to go home and discuss it with my husband because it definitely would mean an adjustment in our living style. Mm-hmm. And through talking about it and putting it on paper, it made sense to do it given the overall compensation package of the nice pension plan at that point, as well as the future opportunity. So I accepted the position and actually started on November 1st of 2011.
Going into the job, was it what you expected as you were, you know, starting in that position?
I didn't know what to expect. Mm-hmm. However, I walked into two staff members, and then I was lucky to have the previous budget director there who had been with Westchester for 29 years. And she continued to stay on and basically be available when needed as far as different types of tasks I was assigned. So the initial transition was great.
So you got good support from the university initially, you had resources available to you, so it's kind of what you were hoping for in some
yes.
ways, right?
Yes.
When was it that you started to realize that some things were not exactly going the way that you thought they were? I'm starting to notice that were things that raised some flags for you.
Basically, at the fiscal year end, which is June 30th of each year, at that point, Linda wasn't around, and I was basically looking at, you know, doing all the financial work and weeding through what our actual surplus was. And in the meantime, Pashi basically represents the 14 universities, and there's a budget report that each university submits to Pashi. So in July 1st, we had gotten budget report instructions regarding the budget that you submit to the state or the Commonwealth. And you had a conference call with Lois Johnson and with Ginger Coleman, who explained the process.
And these were all Pashi officials.
These are all Pashi officials. So being my first time into it, didn't think anything about it, thought, okay, started to approach that, filling that out, but getting to the fiscal year end surplus, that I figured out that the surplus for that year was $18.1 million. And
Not small change.
And I was thrilled about that. I mean, I thought, oh, great, nice, healthy environment I'm in, and this is all good. And so I started filling out the BUD report, and the instructions require you, there's three columns. The first column is your actual column for the fiscal year end that's just ended that June 30th. And then the next column is the budget that is for the new fiscal year. And then you have the third column, excuse me, which is the request year. So in your actual column, the instructions were that it had to balance. And the second column, the budget for the current fiscal year, had to be balanced. But then the instructions read for the third column that the request year had to be unbalanced. So when Lois had called and spoke with me, I said, I don't understand the instructions within this report, because like for the case in Westchester, we made $18.1 million. And you're saying that I have to report a zero balance. And she said, yes. And I said, well, that doesn't make any sense to me. How do I do that? And she explained that the report basically consists of your revenue, your expenditures, and then your transfers. There's a transfer section. So you have, like, say, mandatory transfers, which basically are for your debt obligations, are absolutely mandatory. And then there are these other transfer lines that basically there was a line, I think it was 803, it doesn't matter, but that's where you put the plug figure to transfer more. It acted like an expense. Mm-hmm. So it increased your overall total expenses. So whatever your surplus was, you would have to put the opposite in to make it balance, say for the actuals. So I expressed my concern, and basically she said, you don't have anything to worry about. It's just a political document. It means nothing to you or your internal process.
So these were not actual transfers of funds to, like, pay something off. This was just about how it appeared on this report.
Correct. So I was very confused. So with that, I actually went to my boss and explained, you know, these are the instructions, and I don't know what to make of this. And I said, I acknowledge that I've never worked for a governmental institution where I'm getting instructions from, like, who is Lois, who is Ginger, et cetera.
And who is your boss at this point?
This is Mark Mixner, the Vice President of Finance and Administration. And he basically said, oh, Colleen said that this, you know, just follow their instructions, because it's just a political document. It doesn't mean anything to us. And I said, well, if I'm submitting this and my name is on it, that makes me extremely uncomfortable. I can't do that in all good conscience, knowing that the surplus was $18.1 million. In the meantime, behind the scenes, the president had made the decision to pay down debt on McDermott Drive. So we had a loan of $4.7 million with PASHI.
What's McDermott Drive?
Is a building on campus that we actually borrowed under PASHI's umbrella, that since we had so much cash, I don't think they wanted to show the cash, so they took the $4.7 million, paid down the loan, so net effect, we had a $13.4 million cash surplus. So Mark basically said, you just need to do this. So I was uncomfortable with it. So I went to who I considered my mentor, was Chris Ferrantino. He was the dean of business at that point in time. He got accounting. He understood everything. So I put together, you know, the financial reports out of SAP. I brought the instructions for the BUD report. And I explained to him the conversation I'd had with Lois, and then I explained the conversation that I had with Mark. And I said, you know, I also, at that point in time, sat on, it was the university's Administrative Budget Committee, which they use the acronym ABC. Mm-hmm. And I facilitated those meetings. I, you know, basically did the agenda, etc. And it was the night before the ABC meeting when I went to Chris. And I said, Chris, this is what I'm thinking about presenting to the ABC committee tomorrow, because I don't think this just implies me is doing something wrong, but I think as far as the university in general, if we submit this report to the state that is basically determining the appropriation for Westchester University, it's taxpayers' dollars, that I'm concerned for all of us that we're doing something wrong. And Chris agreed. He said, you know, and I said, you know, the budget committee are the members that should weigh in on this decision. And he totally agreed, and he said, that's fine. Why don't we do that?
So we're in this mode at the state level for kind of cutting funds, and you have Westchester is showing over $18 million in surplus, down to 14 after the payment, or 13 after the payment. And then you're saying, here's the context, we're in healthy situations, this doesn't feel comfortable. Okay, just want to make
sure. And it's September, like at this point in time when I'm having the conversation with Chris, it was September 19th of 2012. So September 20th was our next ABC meeting. Mm-hmm. So I had made copies of all the reports, all the information showing what our surplus was. And as a practice, what the university would do is that the PASHE budget report was one thing, but then you also had your budget report that you submitted to your Council of Trustees, okay? So on that report, basically in years past, they always showed the Council of Trustees about a $500,000 surplus. And in my case, where I came in with the budget and we had to present the budget to the Council of Trustees there was a bottom line of $2.1 million.
Okay.
So what happened was they transferred the monies, and they transferred actually where they showed a bottom line of $500,000, but the anticipated surplus was about $2.1 million. So long story short, there was a lot of email exchange about what should be the surplus that we show the Council of Trustees, which was confusing to me too, because there's all this email exchange about what it should be, and I'm like, why are we not showing what it was?
What it actually is.
So I'm still on the learning curve trying to understand this. And again, it was just all about how they wanted to present the information to external parties.
So for your perspective, you should just take those that original budget that you had put together and found the $18.1 million, and this goes to everybody, because this accurately represents the financial situation of the university.
Correct, and it could reflect the payment of the bond payoff.
The bond payoff.
So right. It would be 13.4. So in my world, that's what it would show. But in their world, the monies would get transferred to plant, okay? The excess unrestricted funds. They were unrestricted funds at that point in time. And that's the critical point. So
let me ask you one more question about this. So who now knows about this now that you're aware of? Who knows that? We obviously got PASHE knows that there's these different budgets being prepared. You've got Mark Mixner clearly knows this. Right. Who else is on the
Well, this inside? Went up to the president, because mm-hmm. I was so uncomfortable about this, because again, I felt I'm a governmental worker now, and I did not understand the law. I didn't understand, like, from this, all I knew was that I didn't want to misrepresent numbers. So basically I put in an email to my boss, like, okay, we're going to change the surplus. What should the surplus be? He ends up having a discussion with the president, who the president then ends up saying it should be what we budgeted. So at that point in time, that budget, which reflected increased enrollment, because Westchester University mm-hmm. was increasing, okay? So within that budget, and I believe it was myself who did the 2.1, not knowing the pass was always 500,000, but I'd have to confirm that. But long story short, they end up reporting to the Council of Trustees, I think, a surplus of $2.1 million. The budget was 1.9 surplus, okay? So it exceeded that budget, and that's all in email. And then as far as the BUD report goes, we continued on to our September 20th ABC meeting, where I present again this, you know, our true surplus and then the instructions from the Commonwealth as far as filling out this report, and in the actual column making that zero, the request year a budget of zero, and the following year the number we were supposed to make that was a $2 to $3 million deficit. So it was a delta swing of $21 million, say. So in explaining that, Mark Pavlich, who was the vice president of development at that point in time, advancement
at Westchester.
At Westchester University, started laughing. He's like, "Oh, here we go with the Pashy games again." And the provost, Linda Lammers, actually mentioned, "Well, it's the same kind of stuff they have us do with the headcount. So it just justifies they inflate headcount." And they, on certain reports, they would inflate headcount in order to there had to be some economic benefit. But it, at that point, it went over my head. Like, I'm just new to all this, and I'm trying to understand what is going on with this Pashy world. And basically, everybody laughed and said, "You can't do that. Like, that's wrong, etc." And the only person who really raised a brow, who was very upset about this, was Larry Dowdy, who was the executive deputy. He was second in charge to the president. The president didn't attend our meetings, but he was not happy that I had put these reports out around the table.
And so he was not happy with you.
Yeah, he
with
was.
With what you were not, he wasn't unhappy with the manipulation of the data. He was unhappy with the very fact that you even shared that.
Correct. And and then my boss was there, and they basically, everybody said, "Well, you know, we shouldn't do this." And we're, you know, some people were concerned about it. So Mark said that he would follow up with Lois Johnson the next day, that he just didn't feel as though it was right either. And so that meeting ended, and then it was, that was, I believe, a Thursday, and it was either, I think it was Friday, Mark Mixner came down to my office, and which he would never come to our building. So I didn't think it was going to be a good thing. And he was not happy, and he explained to me how disappointed he was that I had brought those reports to the Administrative Budget Committee, and how could I do that? And I should have went to a mentor and had a discussion with a mentor first. And I said, "Excuse me," I said, "I brought it to you first, and you told me it was a political document." And then actually, and the mentor he referred to was Chris Ferrantino. And I said, "Well, actually, I went to Chris Ferrantino the night before, and he supported me bringing it to the Administrative Budget Committee." And I said, "Mark, I'm confused by this conversation, because aren't these our trusted colleagues? Aren't we in this together as far as looking after the university? Why can't we have an open discussion about this?" And he just said, "Well, you've just shot your credibility, and people are not going to will not trust you in the future." And I was like, "Well, I had a concern I had to deal with. You told me I had to do this, and I was very uncomfortable about it." Well, in the meantime, the following week came around, and we went back to the ABC meeting where Mark had the conversation with Lois Johnson, and Lois Johnson told Mark that if you do not show that deficit, you will not be getting the appropriation funding. And Mark said that he took the conversation to the president, and the president said we had to show the deficit. So I, at the meeting, said I was uncomfortable doing that, and I couldn't partake in the action of completing that request. What was decided is Mark basically said, "Look, complete the rest of the report, and then send it to me, and I will change that transfer line, and I will submit it." So that was the agreement, and he did that. However, he submitted it under my name. So even though the email came from him, you know, and he never changed his name on the report, so that also concerned me. So I had followed up with a memo documenting the conversations and the transactions that took place, basically to clear my name and say, I didn't touch this. Like, I did the rest of the information that was legitimate at the time. And there was discrepancies and improvements, but with any budget process, you have that. So that didn't concern me, but this outright plug of a number for that basically correlated with the amount of taxpayer dollars that the university was going to receive, I didn't want to touch. So I followed up with a document, a memo, and an ABC committee, I had distributed that, and it was not well received. And from there going forward, it continued as far as the challenge, because I continued to challenge the Pashy Lois Johnson and Ginger Coleman on this, and continue to say, how can this be right? How can we? And they would explain to me, Colleen, you're overthinking this, because what happens is that all the universities fill out this report. And then what happens is it all gets rolled up into one. So it's not like yours is getting submitted on its own. We consolidate all of them. And so basically, you have nothing to worry about. Well, I was still so nervous. I ended up calling budget managers from the profitable institutions, because they were the institutions that were being told to change the number to make it whatever it needed to be to maintain the appropriation dollars we had been receiving.
So these are other Pashy universities?
Correct. So I had reached out to Indiana U, and there were, I think, Kutztown, three or four, talked to their budget managers, and every one of them just said, it's a political document. Like, this is just something everybody does. And I was like, well, I don't understand, because it has no reflection on reality. And you know, you don't get nervous about this. And they're saying, you're being advised from someone in a very high position at the Commonwealth to do this. This can't fall back on us. This is on them. So that was their rationale. And that's, you know, they truly didn't give it any more thought. Where I continued to challenge and seek how to work around this. And it got to the point that I became so uncomfortable, I started looking for other jobs. However, during that time frame, like, I was going to school, I had my master's in finance, and I thought it'd be very helpful to have my CPA license. So I was taking courses at the university, and I was my third course in, and during this September of 2012, I'm trying to think if that was 2012, I ended up having shingles after the first go around with the ABC committee, and developed terrible intestinal problem, irritable bowel syndrome, was extremely sick, and thought, you know what, this is ridiculous. Like, I don't know what to do about this. As I shared, I have four boys, and my oldest child was at Penn State. He had transferred over to Westchester, so he was in the Westchester system when all this was taking place. So I actually, because of health reasons, started to look for other jobs. And at that point in time, unemployment was terrible. Mm-hmm. And I went on job interviews, but my pay was more than, like, the offers that I received, I would have had to cut my pay even further, like, in half. It was it just wasn't feasible. So this continued, and nothing changed. In the past, the faculty never got the BUD reports. And that was also a critical piece to this, is that I always had concern if other people start to look at this year in and year out, and they had knowledge of what the true surplus was, wouldn't they have, you know, any concerns about this? And I was told again by Lois and Ginger at that time, don't worry about it. The faculty never get these reports.
These budgets that are being prepared aren't just going to state lawmakers and appropriations, right? I mean, what I recall about these are the numbers then get shared with faculty, with students, and with the general public too as well. Is that correct?
Well, it depended, because what it continued to evolve was, depending on the audience, is the budget they saw. So leading up to this, in the background, which when I was first hired, like, my job was to basically right-size the budgets and fix the budget process, which was an awesome challenge for me, mm-hmm. and very excited about it, because it was obvious that what was happening was, instead of right-sizing budgets, that they were not doing a budget to actual comparison, which would show where the surplus lies, you know, throughout the university. What began to transpire was they were excluding me from more and more meetings. And the ABC meeting, actually, I went from facilitator, and then I Mark Mixner then took over the meetings, and even from there, Larry Dowdy ended up ultimately being the facilitator of ABC meetings. But it was more that I was being ignored and basically not included in critical information sessions. So I had attended president council meetings, where you had key leaders of the university, and it would be could be 150 people attend these meetings. So it was your deans, your chairmans, your all various, your administrators, etc., at these meetings. And they had presented a budget that was in relation to a succession plan that I had not heard anything about. And in that budget actually showed we were doing pretty well. And that was very amusing, yet they didn't give anything out, and I had written all the numbers down. And within time, that succession plan ended up getting shot down again. Well, with that, the faculty started really asking a lot of questions, and the faculty started wanting the BUD reports. And I had received a phone call, and somebody demanded these BUD reports, which then, of course, we were told from PASHI we weren't allowed to give out the BUD reports. They would have to come from either the president, or they would have to go through PASHI to get the BUD reports. But it heightened my awareness that people were concerned. And then we had a Council of Trustee meeting where the AFSCoF chairman came, Lisa Milhouse.
Lisa Milhouse, yep.
So she came, and she was raising her concerns, which I was there because I would present the finance results for whatever period of time. And so it began to get me even more nervous. And so as time went on, it was in October, there was a president's cabinet meeting, and that consisted of all the vice presidents, the president, executive deputy, and Chris Ferrantino was at that meeting. I'm not sure, his title changed throughout time, and he was moving up. And basically, they said there was the faculty members wanted a three-year budget projection, and they wanted to understand the details of the budget better, and that was October 6th of 2014. And it evolved to, they asked me to present a budget, and at this point, the speech was delivered to me that, you know, in order to build your credibility, we want you to present this budget to this faculty group, and they gave me the assumptions for the budget, which it was the sky is falling type of budget. And I shared with my boss that I was very uncomfortable with presenting that budget, especially when I was trying to build credibility. And realistically, we were, you know, $17 million. I think the following year, it was a $13 million surplus. And these were huge deficits that they were going to be presenting to the faculty. So my boss said, well, go ahead, develop your realistic budget, and then you can develop our budget, and then we can present both budgets to this faculty group. So I said, great, and I felt very relieved, very supported, and proceeded to get invited to a meeting at the Enrollment Management Committee, whereby Mark Pavlich basically headed up that committee. And again, he's the vice president of development. And he said, can you send them the materials that you're going to be presenting? So at that point in time, that evening, my boss said, you're not going to be presenting The Sky is Falling. You're not going to be presenting, the realistic budget. The president only wants you to present The Sky is Falling budget. And I was very uncomfortable about that. And mind you, my whole employment at this point in time is very, I produce everything that they asked me to do, but I'm still challenged by all this changing and manipulating of numbers. Mm-hmm. And so the EMC, I asked Mark, who sits on the EMC meeting? What is the objective of this meeting? And basically it was about changing enrollment numbers for 200 to 300, but not to concern myself about it, that was their business, and I was just there to present the Sky is Falling budget. So I didn't know what to do, and I had gone through everyone I could think of as far as trying to seek out help, as far as someone paying attention to what was going on and having interest in this, as far as worrying about reporting correct information. So that night I talked to my husband, and I said, I can't just present this budget without presenting the realistic budget. And so I had decided that I was going to take both budgets with me, and knowing that my boss outright told me not to present the other budget. And the group that I was meeting with is Lori Bernoski, who is now the current provost. She was there. They're like influential people there that I didn't interact with hardly at all. But this group would get it. And so I went to the meeting and presented the budget that The Sky is Falling. And then a question came up and said, well, we know we've had surpluses. How in the world are we in this bad a shape? And I responded and basically said, well, honestly, there's a realistic budget too. And here is the budget that if we were really projecting numbers from a trend basis or a more factual basis, this is what the budget would look like, and it would be generating a surplus. So with that, Mark Mixner was not happy, and I distributed the budget. And
your budget?
Yeah, my budget. And at that point in time, Chris Ferrantino spoke up for me, and he said, you can't have her present this tomorrow. Like, this is, it's complete fraud. Like, you can't do this to her. And everybody agreed around that table. And everybody's like, this is ridiculous. So Mark got extremely nervous, and Mark was like, well, what do you want me to do? This is what the president wants. And they said, you need to go back and talk to the president again. And he said he would do that. And he went back and he spoke to the president, and the president said that he only wanted The Sky is Falling budget to be presented. And I said, well, I'm sorry, I can't present that. So the next day, it was the next day or 2 days, I think it was the next day, Mark presented the budget to the faculty. And the funny thing about it was we ended up splitting into roundtable discussions where people didn't even know who I sat down. I didn't go up and sit with Mark. And Bill Zwan, who is the football coach, I was at his table. And he was sitting there, and we broke up in this roundtable discussion. And the discussion at our table is, what a bunch of bogus. Like, we know we made these huge surpluses. And I was so thrilled because I was like, these people are not idiots. And that would have been me up there presenting this. And the whole purpose of them telling me this was to build credibility. Basically, everybody was saying not very nice things about Mark Mixner at that point in time. And I was relieved, but at the same time, I knew I was in a pickle, right? Because I was running out of time. And so that meeting broke up. And October 30th. And I had had my performance.
2014.
2014, yes. And I had my performance evaluation. It was, I think, in September. And it was very good. And that was September. Then the October incidents occurred. Then in November 18th, I was called down to the HR office and greeted by Mike Malloy, who was our Assistant Vice President of Human Resources, and Mark Mixner, who then handed me a notice that said my contract would not be renewed at the end of that fiscal year, reason being that I was not the right fit for the university and I was not the problem solver that they thought I would be, despite what my performance evaluation specifically said about my performance was that I was quite the problem solver, etc. And thirdly, that the senior leadership team had lost credibility in my ability to work along with them. So basically, my job was terminated.
And what day was that?
That was November 18th of 2014. Which then I end up again with the shingles and very sick and not knowing what to do. Because so many people were involved. So many people all agreed it was all wrong. And the real kicker was going back to my office and Chris Ferrantino stopped down to see me, who I looked at him as my... you know, as someone who advocated for me, et cetera, and I trusted him. And he sat across the table and he said, you know, I am so sorry. He said that you have more guts than anyone I know. He said, but he said, I couldn't help you because a family, his son or daughter, I'm not sure, was getting married that year. And I said, wow, your son or daughter's getting married? Like, I'm getting fired for speaking up, doing the right thing, and I have four mouths to feed at home, and that's okay. Like, you have a wedding? Seriously? Like, I was pretty upset at that time, and I just couldn't believe that nobody would come to speak up and do the right thing. Yet they all acknowledged what was going on was wrong, but they had the luxury of not being involved and not saying anything. And guess what? He's now president. Everybody else is gone, but he's the president. And, you know, I went 30 feet back in my career. I've lost everything I've worked for. And there's no consequence for any of those characters.